from Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. As the conflict in Syria now enters its fifth year, a report presented Friday to the UN Security Council has been attacked by that country's ambassador as being biased and under the influence of those who are conducting war against Damascus. The report details alleged human rights violations that occurred over the course of the conflict from March of 2011 until the beginning of this year. But despite the fact that foreign terrorist armies have been killing Syrian civilians and security forces since 2011, only Syria's government was targeted by the report. We begin with this from Stephanie Kutrix at the United Nations.
The findings of the human rights experts show little progress has been made towards securing peace and justice for Syrians. The investigation draws on more than 3,550 interviews with victims and eyewitnesses in and outside the country collected since September 2011. It says that violence in Syria, which began with civil unrest, has mutated into an increasingly violent armed conflict. Speaking to the press after the report was presented to the UN Security Council, British Ambassador Mark Lyle Grant described the situation for civilians caught between warring parties.
We heard of the horrific scale of violations and abuses being carried out against innocent civilians. Today we heard that the government's military assaults follow a distinct pattern. They cut civilian areas off from access to food, medical supplies, and sometimes electricity as aerial bombardments intensify. Then, as the wounded try to leave, they are arrested, as are those trying to smuggle in much-needed food and medicines. While violations and abuses are being committed by all sides, it is clear that the regime has committed the overwhelming majority and bears the ultimate responsibility for the protection of its citizens.
Meanwhile, the chair of the UN Commission of Inquiry on Syria says it is unconscionable that Syrians should continue to suffer as they have for the last 4 years. Paulo Sergio Pinheiro has been leading the team of experts who were mandated by the UN Human Rights Council to investigate and record all violations of international human rights law in Syria. He said the international community has a crucial role to play in protecting innocent Syrians.
We have examined the ways how the Security Council can be more assertive in terms of realizing this need to end impunity in Syria. We are trying to convince the international community to consider all options for accountability and not to ignore the victims of this war.
The report also highlights how terrorist groups have flourished as the conflict drags on. Insurgents from al-Nusra and the so-called Islamic State, or ISIL, have gained control of significant economic resources and use tactics that instill terror among the civilian population, including public executions and mutilation. The report is scheduled to be formally presented on the 17th of March at the 28th session of the Human Rights Council in Geneva. Stephanie Kutrix, United Nations.
Syria's permanent representative to the United Nations, Bashar Ja'afari, challenged the report as biased, saying it was a propaganda ploy that demonized his government while ignoring the actions of other states supporting the terrorists that are doing the killing in his country.
You have heard, as I did, the British ambassador, who is supposedly going to be the next president of the Security Council, addressing you on the informal meeting with the so-called independent commission of the Council on Human Rights with regard Syria. I'm stressing and underlining the reference I made to this meeting by calling it informal, because it happened outside of the Security Council, and therefore it represents only the standpoint of those who spoke. However, I would like to make the following comments. The Syrian government, as you know, has always expressed its reservation vis-à-vis the work and undertakings of this so-called commission established by the Council on Human Rights. The Syrian government did so because from the beginning we said that this commission was established for political purposes to serve a hidden agenda of the handlers and masters of the terrorists who are targeting Syria, Syria the government, Syria the country, and Syria the people. This commission has been biased from the beginning. It didn't visit Syria. It met only with people who live abroad and claiming to be opponents. And it did ignore always, until now, all the reports submitted to it by the Syrian government. If you go through this, the report of the commission, you would see that it reflects the standpoints and the points of view of the so-called opponents outside of Syria, in the camps and elsewhere, in Turkey, Jordan, Lebanon, and elsewhere. But it did neglect to mention any word on the thousands of papers and information and the plenty of information we provided to the commission as a government for years. So this in itself indicates how biased this commission is. Therefore, we think that the commission is an integral part of the problem and is not a part of the solution of the crisis in Syria. The commission has been used by the influential guys in the Council of Human Rights, as well as in the Security Council, to harm the image of the Syrian government and to diabolize the actions of the Syrian government while dealing with this war of terror launched against Syria and the Syrian people and the Syrian government for 4 years. Before engaging in this important exercise of question and answers, I would like to show you something very useful and very indicative. This is a book, an unusual book, 500 pages, elaborated by the Syrian authorities on the foreign terrorists killed in Syria in the month of October 2013, foreign terrorists, only foreigners, coming from the same guys who are supposed to represent the Security Council and the Council on Human Rights, with photos, names, nationalities. These are the, some of them maybe were used as witnesses by this commission against the Syrian government. Many of them came from Jordan, who assumes the chairmanship of the Council on Human Rights, as you know. Many of them came from Saudi Arabia, from Libya, Tunisia, Pakistan, Afghanistan, Australia, USA, Britain, France, Belgium, England, Germany, Italy, who else? Qatar, United Arab Emirates, Kuwait, Kyrgyzstan, Lithuania, Burkina Faso, Nigeria, Egypt, Palestinians, by coincidence, Lebanese, Canada. These are the Syrian opposition. These people, these foreigners, are the Syrian opposition that the Americans call moderate Syrian opposition. They are Australian, but they are moderate Syrian opposition. You like it, you dislike it, this is how the American present it. So these are Syrian legitimate opposition, democratic opposition, peaceful opposition. They may be Pakistanis, but they are Syrian opposition. And this mistake is being repeated unlawfully, impolitely, by high-level UN officials, such as the spokesperson of the Secretary General himself, who repeatedly consider the terrorists operating in the Syrian Golan, occupied by Israel, as Syrian armed opposition groups. While we all know, according to the Security Council reports, that these people are terrorists from ISIL and Al-Nusra Front, who kidnapped UN staff from UNDOF upon instructions from Qatar. And their wounded guys are treated in the Israeli hospitals by the Israeli authorities. Still, the spokesperson of the Secretary General insists in considering these terrorists Syrian armed opposition groups. And the head of the Syrian armed opposition groups operating in the Syrian occupied Golan by Israel is by coincidence a Jordanian who used to be the right hand of al-Zarqawi in Iraq. So something is wrong in here. Something hypocrite is taking place somewhere. People are misleading the members of the Security Council. Some people, influential guys, are misleading the media and the public opinion. They are dealing, equally speaking, with the Syrian government and the terrorist groups on an equal footing. Isn't a violation of the Security Council resolutions 2170, 2178, and 2199? We have just endorsed three resolutions in the Council on ISIL, on foreign fighters, on Al-Nusra Front, on sponsoring terrorists through the Syrian-Turkish border, on stealing antiquities and artifacts and cultural heritage. What are we doing with these resolutions in the Council? These should follow the words. We are the only government in this organization which is implementing these three Security Council resolutions. And here are the examples and the proofs and the evidences. We are the only government implementing these resolutions. So I'm once again reminding you that these 500 pages of terrorist photos covers only 1 month, October 2013. I will show you plenty of similar books updating these terrorist operations in Syria upon instructions from their handlers and their masters, who are nobody else but some of these influential guys in the Security Council, as well as in the Council on Human Rights.
Sure, thanks a lot. I understand that you think the whole inquiry is biased from the beginning, but I just asked the commissioners whether anyone from the Free Syrian Army or other supposed, you know, moderate opposition groups, so described, are part of their report or listed in the names. And it didn't seem, they mentioned the Kurds. I wanted to know, when you're talking about terrorist groups, are you referring to what are not just Nusra and Daesh, but the Free Syrian Army? And do you have any comment on this new agreement between Turkey and the U.S. to begin training fighters beginning in March, that at least as reported yesterday?
You may remember that according to the Pentagon estimates last year, there are 2,000 terrorist armed groups operating in Syria. That was the Pentagon estimates, not the Syrian government estimates. So according to the Americans, a year ago, they estimated that there are 2,000 armed terrorist groups operating in Syria. Of course, this figure multiplied with the time. Maybe they are nowadays 3,000 terrorist groups. These terrorist groups did not come to Syria through parachute. They came from Australia, they came from USA, they came from France, they came from Saudi Arabia, from Kuwait, from Qatar, from Turkey. They didn't come through parachutes. When a terrorist, Australian terrorist, leaves Sydney and find himself out of a sudden in Aleppo, could anybody explain to me how did he cross all these borders? How did he cross all these countries? How did he lure all these intelligence services on his way from Australia to Syria? without being intercepted? How these thousands of terrorists cross our border coming from Turkey without being intercepted? Who sends these terrorists from all over the world? Who sponsors them? Who receives them at the airport of Ankara and Istanbul before escorting them to the Syrian-Turkish border? Who sent them from Lebanon and from Jordan inside Syria? Who are the victims in this tragic situation? Aren't they the Syrians, the Iraqis, and nowadays the Libyans and the Egyptians? I'm sure you heard what the Egyptian minister and the Libyan minister for foreign affairs and the Algerian also said yesterday in this council, in this chamber, on the situation prevailing in Libya. As if the Syrian ambassador was speaking in the council 2 years ago. They repeated what we kept saying for 2 years, 3 years, and 4 years. Now everybody is acknowledging the veracity, the accuracy, and the validity of what we kept saying for 4 years. But some of these people, influential guys in the council, still stubborn. They don't want to acknowledge that they are wrong. And their policies were wrong vis-à-vis Syria. This is a war of terror launched against my country.
Ambassador, can I ask you about these secret lists that they have compiled and they say they are thinking of publishing? Are you worried that key officials of your government, of the military, even the name of President Assad might be on that list?
All this propaganda aims at diabolizing the Syrian government and misleading the public opinion. They did it in the past and they will do it in the future. What kind of credibility could we give to such documents when we know that the High Commissioner for Human Rights is Jordanian? That the chair of the Alliance of Civilization Forum is Qatari? That the UN Center to Combat Terrorism is sponsored by Saudi Arabia? That Turkey will host the first UN humanitarian summit? What kind of credibility can we have in this organization when we give to these people these posts, important and crucial posts, while their governments are deeply involved in the bloodshed of the Syrian people? This is what I can answer you.
Caleb Maupin, Press TV News. There have been some reports coming out that a lot of the money allegedly being raised for Syrian refugees is actually going to fund terrorism. Can you talk about this? And also, you mentioned that a number of the insurgent terrorists are from Jordan, and that, you know, there have also been reports that Zaatari refugee camp, the United Nations refugee camp, is a recruiting ground for the terrorists. And is there any possibility that the UN is in fact enabling this terrorism to continue?
Billions of dollars have been collected in the Gulf states. Billions of dollars have been collected in the Gulf states by so-called NGOs, charity organizations, but also by foreign intelligence services, to be sent to the camps as well as to inside Syria to instigate terrorist acts against the Syrian government. The Syrian government kept asking the Syrians living in these camps to get back to their country, where the government will assume its responsibilities in hosting them the way we are doing it, actually, for millions of Syrians displaced internally. So we don't want to see any Syrian living abroad in these so-called camps, which are a territory for rapes, for early marriage for girls, for training terrorists. It's a haven for training terrorists and recruiting terrorists and sponsoring terrorists from all over the world, actually, not only from amongst the Syrian community living in these camps. So this issue is very important and very crucial. We shouldn't only focus on the form, we should focus on the substance. We should focus on those who are sending these billion of dollars from the Gulf states. Why they are sending these billion of dollars? why they are imposing sanctions on the Syrian people, why USA, the European Union, and the Gulf states are imposing sanctions on the Syrian people. If they care about the Syrian people, they wouldn't have imposed sanctions on the Syrian people, which prevents such sanctions that prevents the welfare of the Syrian people. So these countries' governments are an integral part of the problem. They cannot be helpful to solving the humanitarian situation in Syria. They created this humanitarian situation in Syria by sponsoring the terrorists, by imposing sanctions, and by misleading the public opinion on the real situation prevailing in, inside Syria. Last question, please.
Ambassador, so as you know, there is new attempt, new initiative by Staffan de Mistura regarding the ceasefire in Aleppo. Do you think that this kind of the activities of the Commission of Inquiry may prevent this positive initiative?
We are expecting Mr. de Mistura to get back to the capital to brief the Syrian government about his his consultations with the members of the Security Council, and then we will take it from there.
Do you have any comment on this countering violent extremism conference that's been held in Washington for the last 3 days? I just wanted to ask your view of it.
We were not invited to attend this conference, number one. Number two, it is held from outside the UN framework. Number three, it gathered part of the so-called membership of the United Nations, not all the members of the United Nations. Therefore, it's not committing anybody in this organization as a whole. It's not universal. It's not an international conference. It's similar to other conferences that dealt with the nuclear disarmament, for instance, or other issues from outside the United Nations framework. Unfortunately, the U.S. administration did not invite some governments, including my own government, to attend this conference. While, you know, Syria, Iraq, and other countries are mainly concerned with this terrorist phenomenon that is prevailing all over the world. What we warned against for years in this council and here, against the terrorist activities prevailing in Libya since 2011, all the weapons, or most of the weapons that ended up in Syria through Lebanon and Turkey came from Libya. And the UN Subcommittee for Combating Terrorism issued a special report on this issue, confirming and corroborating what we kept saying, that these weapons came from Libya. Nowadays, people are saying, you know what? Libya is a chaos. Libya is a chaotic situation, and we need to deal with this problem prevailing in Libya. We said it 4 years ago. But the result is thousands of our people who got killed with Libyan weapons, with Libyan so-called terrorist jihadists coming from Libya and Tunisia and elsewhere, through Turkey and through Lebanon. Thank you.
With coup plots and reports of spy intrigue springing up around the region, a Venezuelan mayor was arrested and charged with involvement in a coup attempt in that country. We have this report from Press TV.
Now, Venezuelan authorities have arrested the mayor of Caracas, Antonio Ledezma, over accusations of plotting to overthrow the government. Ledezma is being held at the intelligence services headquarters. Now, President Nicolas Maduro says the mayor must answer questions about crimes committed against the country's peace, security, and constitution. The mayor's detention comes a day after opponents of the government marked the anniversary of the arrest of another opposition leader. We're not joined out of Caracas by Press TV's own Jesus Silva. Now, Jesus, just less than a week ago, Maduro was, blaming the United States for trying to stage a coup against him. Is this in any way related?
It pretty much seems that there is a relation between the announcements by President Nicolas Maduro and now this newly arrest against Caracas Major Mr. Antonio Ledezma. according to the information given by President Maduro and his government, the Embassy of the United States of America here in Venezuela has been holding meetings with opposition leaders, and these meetings seem to be related to conspiracy and also to a coup plot. So in this context, President Maduro has explained to the nation today that these investigations that are being developed by district attorney are related to stopping what seems to be a coup. So Mr. Ledezma seems to be involved in these operations, and for that reason, he's about to be taken to court to face criminal charges related to coup and to conspiracy against President Nicolas Maduro.
Right now, Jesus, I mean, it begs a question why, the president doesn't perhaps maybe expel some of the diplomats at that embassy, or perhaps maybe even lobby to shut down the embassy when he's actually appointed that embassy trying time and again over the last 6 months. He's already blamed it almost three or four times trying to plot a coup against his government.
Well, the opposition dismisses the allegations by President Nicolas Maduro, and the opposition slams Maduro because he still has economic relations with the United States as a president, and Venezuela, as you must know, is a big seller of oil to the United States. But on the other hand, some people say that the ambassador has already been expelled. We have no U.S. ambassador here in Venezuela. We just have a charge d'affaires. So pretty much the staff of the U.S. embassy has already been removed from Venezuelan territory. So we can say that relations between the U.S. and Venezuela are deteriorated to a great extent. In this context, we think, according to official press, that Mr. Ledezma will be facing criminal charges maybe tomorrow within a few hours, and the evidence will be shown about this alleged plan to undermine and overthrow Maduro's government.
For more, we spoke with our reporter from south of the border, Tony Solo, via Skype from Managua, Nicaragua, Friday.
President Maduro last night went on the air and said that they had arrested multiple people who were allegedly behind a coup that was backed by the United States. What's your response?
These latest accusations, like all previous such accusations, are ludicrous. As a matter of longstanding policy, the United States does not support political transitions by non-constitutional means. Political transitions must be democratic, constitutional, peaceful, and legal.
Okay, so that's U.S. policy. Tony Solo, what do you think of that?
Well, I don't know how to describe that. And it's so contrary to the reality that even President Obama acknowledged that they supported an anti-democratic, unconstitutional coup in Ukraine.
Yep.
Not long ago in remarks. So, and for one of his own spokespeople to come out and contradict what he himself has acknowledged is just beyond ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And let alone the history. I mean, down from where you're sitting especially, it must be pretty interesting with hearing that history of it. Long-standing policy.
yeah, sure. Beyond the time of Guatemala in 1954 and Iran, when the United States, even the official establishment in the United States recognizes that they overthrew the legitimate government of Mossadegh in Iran in whenever it was, 1953.
Yes.
So, and it goes way back, and what are these coups but the continuation of colonialism by other means?
We'll go back to Hawaii even. It was U.S. regime change in Hawaii that turned Hawaii into an American property.
Well, yeah, and the Philippines early in the century, mm-hmm. Cuba for some time, mm-hmm. and there's hardly a country in Central America and the Caribbean that hasn't experienced the unwanted presence of U.S. military over the last 100 years.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.